If we consider, for example, some particle moving in x, x is some manifold, and we have this, that's the Lagrangian. Well, the phase space is the cotangent bundle of x, and the coordinates locally q, which is phi, and pi, which is the time derivative. Phi is the standard picture we started with. So that's why if I give you a Lagrangian submanifold of here, why should we think of that as a state? So recall, of course, the phase space is the space of Cauchy data. So if I want to specify the trajectory of my particle, I need to specify its position and its velocity. So a Lagrangian L inside of T star of x specifies the initial data. So it has to be Lagrangian because, for example, a Lagrangian L is given by I can find coordinates where L is given by the zero locus of Green functions with Poisson commute. So let's think about if it wasn't Lagrangian, suppose L, down here, so like the dimension of x is n. So suppose it wasn't Lagrangian. Suppose it was something. Suppose I asked that my position and momentum were fixed. Well, that's not going to work just by the uncertainty principle. So if we ask that more than n functions vanish, so for example, e.g., in some coordinates p1, pn equals 0, and say q1 equals 0, then we violate the uncertainty principle. Or more concretely, so when I translate this into the quantum system, the state I want to break equations into differential equations. This is going to be too small because if we apply canonical commutation relations, p1 hash q1 psi is 0, also Q1 P1 half psi equals 0. This implies the commutator that h bar psi is 0. So if we try to impose more equations than n, we're going to get something that doesn't make sense when we try to lift it to a quantum state. If we imply fewer equations, impose less than n equations, the quantum state psi q will satisfy, this is a function of n variables, and we're imposing less than n differential equations. Implies psi q is undetermined. We might know its derivatives in some directions, but not in others. So there will be lots of ways to solve these equations. So for the initial data, the Lagrangian was like the maximal amount, the strongest constraint I can impose, which is compatible with quantization. And how one should think, how does a Lagrangian determine a state given L? We get a state by studying the path interval with initial data . Okay, so this is the picture. Okay, any questions about this? How would I explicitly figure out this state psi L? If my phase space is R2, we can consider two Lagrangians. Some generic L instead of R2. If this L can be anything, and another Lagrangian is going to be this vertical line there's also the subset Q equals Q naught. So, how do I turn it into a function of q? So the heuristic you should have in mind is I do the path interval, where one end is on my Lagrangian and the other end is on this vertical line. And that's going to give me, that's going to be a number about this vertical line. And that number is the state written as a function of q. The state, psi l of say q naught, is equal to the integral over paths, p of t of q of t, with q naught equals q naught. And P1, Q1, so these are paths. Draw a little wheelie path. That. And I'm going to put this is the heuristic, and I mean, I don't think I will go through right now how to, by manipulating the path integral, we can check that this expression will satisfy a differential equation
associated to my Lagrangian manifold.
We write my Lagrangian submanifold with some equation in p's and q's.
I upgrade p to d by dou q,
and that becomes a differential equation. And the path integral will tell us that psi will satisfy that differential equation to lead in order in h bar. But I leave that for now. And I. So the thing I promised to do today was to study the vacuum of the 2D scalar field. So we have phi. And we have this Lagrangian. So here we are in, for this discussion, we're going to be in Euclidean signature. And G is a metric on OR2. So I've written it in this generality so that you can see if I send g gets sent to e to the f times g, this is a conformal transformation. So, sorry, this is a veiled rescaling. Then the action is unchanged. So this is special to dimension 2. The point is, because it's a 2x2 matrix,
then it comes in 20th power, gets a power of 2,
and that drops
to a power of 1 by the 3/5.
That cancels this guy because one matrix has lower index and the other has upper index.
Sorry, if you just mind moving your microphone.
Is that better?
Yes, thank you.
So if I want to give a state, I need to give you a Lagrangian submanifold of the phase space. So the phase space as you remember is spanned by its coordinates q theta and p theta, and you can also think of it as the set of solutions to the equations of motion on a circle times some very small interval in time. So the nice thing about this geometric picture is that we can give you, I can specify a submanifold of this set of solutions to the equations of motion by asking that my field extends across some other geometry. So that will give me, turn out to be the vacuum state. So the claim is the vacuum state is the Lagrangian L, which is the set of those phi, which solve the equations of motion on a disk. Here's my disk. And the key point is the metric on the disk doesn't matter. Because it's conformal. So I want to specify a state by saying, those field configurations which extend across the disk and solve the equations of motion, the boundary values of such a field configuration will give me a Lagrangian submanifold in the phase space. We can explicitly write down what it is in a minute, but we can even see, just without explicitly writing it down, we can check that it is an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, that is a vacuum state. Okay. And if you're taking a CFT class, this is a version of the state operator correspondence. Okay, any questions? So we want to check that this is preserved by the Hamiltonian. There's two ways to see it. Abstractly, a Hamiltonian is time evolution, of course. This is, I take my disk, which fills in the initial time, and we apply e to the t times the Hamiltonian. We're going to get and then I'm just going to do some kind of and we're going to evolve it on this cylinder. Well, I take my initial state and I apply the Hamiltonian. I'm just going to do these together. And what's happened is I've just stretched out my disk. That's conformally equivalent. The initial disk. Okay. This is a very abstract argument, but the nice thing about it is it works for any conformal theory. You can always get the vacuum state by this procedure. Now, how about a concrete argument? So the disk has polar coordinates, r and theta, metric, r squared plus r squared over 2 pi squared d theta squared. So the Laplace operator, no, sorry, this shouldn't be divided, right? I'm probably going to mess up my factors of 2 pi, sorry. Well, Laplace operator in polar coordinates is d by dr squared minus r inverse d by dr plus 1 over 2 pi squared r minus 2 del theta squared. So so I want my boundary of the disk to look like time times a circle. So I want my boundary of the disk to have a metric which looks kind of like a flat metric, which wouldn't have this factor here. And we achieve this by setting if t is log r, then the metric is since dt is R inverse dr. The metric is then like R squared dt squared. So this is flat times the conformal factor. Okay, so this is all very just some elementary manipulation about polar coordinates. So where's the content? So we want to look at those things which extend across the disk and satisfy the Laplace equation. And we want to say that those are preserved by the Hamiltonian. We want to show it's an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. This, of course, this is a bit weaker than being a vacuum, but it's a start. So to check that this is preserved by the Hamiltonian, we have to say, if I have something which extends across the disk and I take its t derivative, that still extends across the disk. We need to show if phi is a harmonic function, and so is del phi del t. This will tell us that this is preserved under time evolution. But this is kind of obvious because del d by dt is or d by dr. And the commutator of the Laplacian with or d by dr is minus 2. So if del phi is equal to 0, you guys can need to be bored. Something dumb. That was the mistake. Minus 2 times the Laplace. I have something which extends across the disk, I differentiate it, then it still extends across the disk as a harmonic function. But of course, this is all really obvious from a certain point of view, because all I'm saying is the Laplace equation has the symmetries of the conformal transformations of the disk, because rescaling the disk is a conformal transformation. Since the Laplace equation is preserved by the conformal transformation, any solution we'll go to a new solution. Okay. So our next task will be to say, explicitly write out what this state is in terms of P's and Q's. And we'll see that it's a very entangled state. And hopefully this will give you some impression for why the vacuum of any quantum field theory is a very entangled thing. Okay, any questions before we do that?
Kevin, I just want to ask, like, just to have this. So this procedure is very specific to the particular theories that we picked, right?
Yeah, but almost any, you know, we're going to be, people like to study more normalizable theories, like Young-Mills theory. Young-Mills theory is, like, we studied Maxwell theory is conformal already, so that would work for Maxwell theory. If I studied non-abelian gauge theory, it's not conformal as a quantum field theory, but it is as a classical theory. So, you know, it's a small perturbation of a conformal field theory. So this method is actually a good method for pretty much any theory that people like to study.
And the first, first we required conformality to ask for a disk, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I should emphasize, it's really important that we go to Euclidean signature. So, because this disk, you know, if we were in Lorentzian signature, you wouldn't know what to do with the singular at the tip of the disk. So the vacuum is you analytically continue to Euclidean and then you fill it in. And this will give you the vacuum state of most things you come across. Yeah.
So what would I do in a theory which isn't free?
Well, you just do the same thing.
Okay.
You just say the set of solutions to the equations in motion. But now that's a nonlinear manifold.
Yeah, but then this argument with the properties of the Laplace equation wouldn't go through, I guess, right? Only the abstract one, or?
No, but this argument, you can make this. So the argument is really just about the scaling dimension, right? Here, all I'm saying is there's two, or appears minus two times. That's all that's happening. So you can have nonlinear equations in which OR appears with weight minus two as well. For example, it could be phi d phi d phi, and then there's a in the Lagrangian, and then a quadratic equation about d OR d phi squared. And then we'll go through as well, because it's just a thing about something about dimensions. Okay, so how will we actually, and about the entanglement, well, we'll see. Say something in a sec. So the phase space has coordinates q theta, which is phi theta, and p of theta is the derivative. So, asking that phi extends across a disk is very non-local. I'll try to make this more precise, but just intuitively, you know, I need to know something about the value of phi at every point and how they're related, because the disk, the center of the disk sees all of these points. It's not like I'm saying, you know, a local boundary condition would be at every value of theta, p is zero. But that's not something that extends across the disk. So let's write down really concretely what it means to extend across the disk. If n is bigger than 0, or to the n, e to the 2 pi I n theta is harmonic on the disk, just because if I mean, in holomorphic coordinates, this is just z to the n in holomorphic coordinates. But you can also just see it from the Laplace equation explicitly. If n is less than 0, or to the minus n, e to the 2 pi I n theta extends across the disk. So this means if we expand Q sum Qn e to the 2 pi I n theta, if we expand these guys in Fourier modes, well, if I look at the positive values of n, I want to make it extend across the disk, so I need to make its dependence on the radius be like this. So if I take such a thing, I have to say this. So e to the 2 pi I n theta extends to Qn to A. Qn, or absolute value of n, pi I n theta, which has t derivative Qn absolute value of n over the n. So if you're in this subspace of things which extend across the disk, anytime I have a Qn, it must be accompanied by a Pn, which looks like this. So we conclude the subspace is given by the equations that Pn is n q to the n in these coordinates. So if we unpack this and write it again in terms of p theta and q theta, then p theta is sum n qn e to the 2 pi I n theta, sum n, absolute value of n, So I this little derivation is not so important. The key thing that's going to be important is that the relationship between P and Q is expressed as an integral. It's some kind of, I can figure out what my momentum is in the vacuum state by doing some kind of average of my position. And if you rewrite this, you find n bigger than 0, n integral cos 2 pi n theta minus theta prime q theta prime. This is okay. So the relation, this is very non-local. So AG local, not entangled, might be B. P of theta is the derivative of Q of theta plus Q of theta, for example. So over here, this only depends on the value of Q near theta. However, so just like in a discrete system, right? In a discrete system, my state was not entangled. If the equations describing it, if I had one equation which only talked about one set of variables, and another equation which talked about another set of variables. So here we have got this continuous set of variables, because at every value of theta, I have a quantum mechanical system. And a local state might be, you know, oh, in each of those systems, I have some constraint, and they don't really talk to each other, except nearby. But the very non-local one is like we have here, P of theta is expressed in some terms of integral Q theta prime. Depends on all theta prime.
Kevin?
Yeah?
So this is result of mean value theorem for harmonic functions? The fact
yes.
is that is the average of the And like,
yeah.
could you remind me, please? Like, so what we mean by extends across the disk? Like, what was that?
Oh, that like
because the other part is clear, but like the extends
across the disk means extends across. I can write a harmonic. You know, I have a function near the boundary, and I want it to be the boundary value of a harmonic function on the whole disk. I want there to be some harmonic function on the disk whose boundary value is Q. And his normal derivative at the boundary is P.
Okay.
So that's some constraint on P and Q. It turns out to be this constraint. Okay, any other questions about this computation? Okay. And of course, we've said this for the semi-classical system, but actually, if we were to just blindly apply canonical quantization, which is a reasonable thing to do because it's a free system, this would find this equation is the equation describing the vacuum state still. Except now P becomes D by, because P of theta and Q of theta are canonically conjugate, the delta function, we'd find this would be d by dq of theta is equal to this integral. So as usual, I have not prepared quite enough material. So the next class, I wanted to discuss how to understand gate symmetry. So, can I just ask you guys, I'm sure you've seen some things about gate symmetry before, but did you see this, was there a discussion of QED in your quantum field theory class, or?
QED and Yang's as well.
I see. So you should be familiar with gauge symmetry in dimensions bigger than one. Dimension one is kind of a special case. Suppose we have a scalar, say a complex scalar. We can couple to a U1 gauge field. By replacing the action integral d phi bar by integral plus the size of the field strength of A squared. Okay. So this should be a familiar thing. This is what happens in the Higgs mechanism. So I would like to go and study how this works in dimensions 2, 3, and 4. But to start with, I want to study it in dimension 1. Now, dimension 1 is a little bit funny because the field strength of A is AI dxj minus del AJ dxi, and it's an anti-symmetric tensor in two indices, and this is equal to 0 in space-time dimension 1. So if I just take this formula and write it in space-time dimension 1, this term drops out. But A, which only has one component now, is still dynamical. And we must still must impose gauge invariance. So if, say, chi is a generator of gauge transformations, then we should send, you know, something like A So I would expect people to feel kind of like, I'm writing down something where I have a field which has no kinetic term, but I still want to integrate over it in the path integral. Like, why am I allowed to do that? That seems a very strange thing. But the reason it's not such a bad thing is that when we, you know, when I say impose gauge invariance is a redundancy in the description of your system. Two field configurations related by gauge transformations are the same. So that means, well, I can always take a gauge transformation to send this field to zero. So it's actually okay that it doesn't have a kinetic term, because you can choose a gauge before you get rid of it. Is everybody happy with that? Where is that? I want to continue from here next time, so I want to make sure.
I guess if I had like a particle in a circle or something like that, wouldn't there be some issue? Gauging it away, or even in 1D, it's fine. Or...
Yeah. So what we will find is that if you take a in one dimensions of a particle moving on a circle, and I couple to U1 gauge symmetry, the resulting system is trivial, has no degrees of freedom. So why is that true? Well, I can always, by a judicious choice of chi, I can set A to zero. And I'm left with the gauge transformations I'm left with are those chi which are independent of time. I can use that to move myself to any point on the circle I like. So I've gotten rid of the degree of freedom of moving around the circle. What's that?
Yeah, but I'm thinking, isn't there like some special condition on chi? Like, because I know that e to I chi has to be single valued, so chi has to, I don't know, go like angle or something. And then I can only maybe like move A by some discrete amounts, so I still have some a little bit of a piece of freedom left.
If your time was also periodic, that might be possible. But I, in general, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm thinking of periodic time.
Yeah, which I suppose would be a kind of different direction where we're going. What I wanted to show next time is like in exactly that example, the phase space is a point. That introducing the gauge field Originally you had some P and Q, where Q was periodic, but introducing the gauge field gets rid of them. But having a periodic time seems like quite a different thing, and I would have to think about it. Yeah, but let's stop here. I mean, if I mostly want to be sure that you guys are happy with there not being a kinetic term, because I want to just use this next time.